certain type of foundation. They didn't have much steel in them, they were cheap, and they were easy to construct. And then the earthquakes came. Do you remember that? Caused liquefaction over half of our eastern suburbs. And that was the point at which we realised those foundations didn't work. Houses sank into the ground, they bent, and the houses broke. We had put our faith in the wrong types of foundations. So one of the first things the government did at that point was to mandate stronger, better foundations to rebuild. As a species, human beings are pretty prone to putting our faith in the wrong types of things. Prior to the earthquakes, we had our faith in flimsy foundations, and they let us down. Today we're looking at Hebrews chapter 11, which is a chapter all about faith. Before we get into 11, though, can I just jump back to 10 and look at a couple of verses at the end of chapter 10. Verse 36, "You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised." And verse 39, "But we do not belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed, but to those who have faith and are saved." So we've been working through Hebrews over the last wee while, and we've been reminded numerous times as we've gone through this book that this is a letter to the Hebrew people who believed in Jesus, and they are struggling under oppression. And so this letter is an encouragement to them to persevere. And the logic kind of goes something like this. Jesus is superior to all of the other ways. Jesus is the only way that you can be saved, and so as a result of him, you are saved. But you need to persevere. And in order to persevere, you need faith. So have faith. So chapter 11 starts with, now the faith is the confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. We're often told by the world that believing in God requires faith, but not believing in God doesn't require any faith at all. People will say, "Where's your evidence? Why can't I see something? Why isn't there something visible that proves that God exists?" Verse 3 says, "By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, and so that what was seen, what is seen, was not made out of what is visible." The point is that there are two realities here. There is an unseen reality and a seen one. There's visible and invisible. The natural world of space, time, and matter is not all there is. There is something else, another invisible world. Now, if you don't believe God, in God, you might point to science and say, well, science doesn't, it proves that God doesn't exist, right? I did a science degree in geology many years ago, and in one of my very first lectures, my lecturer said, "Science is the search for truth. God does not come into it." And as a young idealistic Christian, I was somewhat offended by that statement. But actually, in thinking about it, in a way, he was right. Science is the study of the physical or the seen world. It's the study of space, time, and matter, the visible world. Science can't assess the unseen. It's a little bit like me asking you to take a ruler and go and assess and measure time. Just because the ruler doesn't work to measure time doesn't mean that time doesn't exist. So my lecturer was correct in that science does not and cannot ever be the tool for answering the question on whether God in an unseen realm actually exists. It can't prove he exists, but it equally can't prove that he doesn't. So either way you look at it, science can't answer that particular question. Let me be clear though, I'm not saying don't trust science, in the same way that I wouldn't say don't trust a ruler. Science helps us understand the world, and interestingly, the more we understand the world, the more this intricate and amazing creation starts to point to God. Science is a really useful tool that's responsible for so much good and so much understanding in the world. Science is actually awesome, but it just can't help us understand the unseen world. And so the conclusion we therefore have to come to is that either way, whether you believe God exists or whether you believe he doesn't, it actually requires faith. Regardless of who you are and what you believe, you have faith in something. So if science can't answer the question on whether God in an unseen realm exists, How on earth can faith then be logical or rational? Other translations of verse 1 say, faith is the evidence of things unseen. How can there be evidence? Well, here's one example of how we can start to demonstrate that the existence of God starts to make logical sense. The theologian Alistair MacIntyre gave an illustration that works a little bit like this. Suppose I gave you something, this, and I asked you whether that was any good or not. Some of you nerds might know what that is. To answer that question, whether that is any good, you have to first ask another question. And that's the question most of you are asking in your minds at the moment, which is, what is that? What's its purpose? You can't answer whether that is any good unless you know what its actual purpose is. That there is a mountain bike brake. It goes on the front and the back wheel of that machine there, and it stops you dying when you ride down a hill. Now that you know that, you can start to figure out whether that thing, those brakes, are any good or not, because you know what their purpose is. So, how do you know whether a human is good or not? To answer that, you need to know what humans are designed for. What are they made for? What's their purpose? If the seen world is all that there is, then there is nothing bigger at play. We are entirely a product of chance, we are an accident, and therefore we don't have a purpose. So we can't answer the question about whether humans are good or not, because we just simply don't have a purpose. It's therefore impossible to judge anything as right or wrong, or good or bad. It's all subjective. But the problem is that we all know deep down inside that violence and injustice, oppression, are wrong. We know what it looks like when people do bad things. But if this world is all there is, then that's just a feeling, because all those statements and those feelings are just an opinion. But the thing is, we have this unavoidable knowledge that certain things are just wrong, an innate core understanding about what is right and what is wrong. And if the physical world is all there is, then this conviction that we all have doesn't make any sense at all. However, if there is a God existing in an unseen realm, outside of our physical world, and he created us for a purpose, then this knowledge of good and evil actually starts to make sense. We innately know right from wrong, good from bad, because we have a purpose. Tim Keller, the late New York preacher, puts it like this. Faith by reason perceives that the seen material world all by itself does not make sense. So there must be an unseen supernatural reality as well. So faith in the unseen is actually logical. The first step in faith is reason, is rational. It helps us to make sense of things. The unseen world starts to make sense of the seen world, not the other way around. Understanding that God exists and that he created the world for a purpose actually starts to explain the world and make it make sense. C.S. Lewis put it like this. I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. But faith is not just rational or logical. It's not just an intellectual exercise. It's also personal. It has a call on your life, because when you recognize that there is a God who created you and has a purpose for you, it makes you listen to him when he calls you. By faith, Noah, when called to go to a place that he would later receive, there's Abraham, or Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, there's that link between the seen and the unseen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By faith, Abraham, when called to a place that he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land. Like a stranger in a foreign country, he lived in tents. Once you genuinely accept the logical conclusion that God exists and he sent his son to save us, it will generate a personal response that actually starts to change the direction of your life. And I think there's a moment or a series of moments in a lot of our lives where you realize there's a choice. There's a big either or. Either there is no God and everything is meaningless, or if there is a God, there is no greater question than my relationship with him. And if there is a Jesus Christ who came and gave himself completely to save me, then how can I not give myself completely in return? So are you just a nominal, rational believer? Because if it's only logical and intellectual, then it won't affect you personally. But if our faith is genuinely personal, then it will start to affect our lives. Moses illustrated this in verse 26. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking forward to his reward. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. There's that reference to invisible again. The seen versus the unseen worlds. Faith is the recognition that the unseen world is the true reality. Moses persevered because he could see him who is invisible. And this faith, this ability to see him who is invisible, changes us by allowing us to start to see what is really permanent. The only things worth building our lives on or putting our faith in are those things that are permanent and everlasting. Similarly, Abraham was able to up and leave and live in a tent with no physical foundations because Abraham was looking forward to a city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. Abraham didn't need foundations on earth because he knew where his true permanent foundations actually needed to be. So firstly, faith is logical. It has kind of a rational basis. Secondly, it becomes personal when you realize the significance of it. And thirdly, faith is foundational. It starts to determine where our foundations are. The Jesus that's being presented here in Hebrews to the Hebrews should be that foundation. So I guess the question is, where is your foundation? What do we build our lives on? What are the things that we rely on or put our faith in that define us as successful people? Where do we get our security? What are we chasing in the minute-to-minute of our lives? Now, it's always good when you're giving a talk like this to have little examples to illustrate the points that you're trying to make. And it's even better if they're personal to you, you've actually experienced them. And to be honest, this week, God has given me an absolute doozy. If you'd asked me a while ago what the foundations of my life were built on, I would have fairly casually and without too much thought have said, yeah, I'm a Christian, I'm a follower of Jesus, my foundations are based on Jesus. But this week at work, I was called into a restructuring meeting and I lost my job. And as a result, I've been forced to confront this very question, where does my security lie? And working through the reality of the situation has made me realize that I actually do, at least in part, define my worth, my success, my value, based on what I do for a job. And I really do care what people think of my abilities. And I do take for granted the security that my job gives me. It's been a bit of a challenge. Don't get me wrong, I'm not telling you this so that you feel sorry for me, because there are people in this church who have far more significant challenges than this in their lives. But I do think it's really easy to have an intellectual faith. But it is much more difficult to genuinely assess where your heart and where your security actually lie. And so in a way, while it kind of sucks, I'm grateful for the reality check. But here's the thing. The fact that I've put at least part of my faith in my job and in my own capacity illustrates quite nicely the danger in relying on these temporary things. Because life has a way of actually taking those temporary things and showing us what they're actually worth. Like jobs, like health, like money, like status, those things that we put our faith in this earth, they don't last. So where does your security actually lie? Where is your faith? By faith, Moses was prepared to give up his life of royalty, where he would have anything that he could ever want, and trade it for a life of being mistreated and living in a tent. By faith, Abraham obeyed and left his home to live in a tent, even though he didn't know where he was going. Don't build your life on something that is not permanent. Building on genuinely permanent foundations is actually the only thing that will make us unshakable in life. Anything else doesn't last. And as I've worked through losing my job this week, I've found that having that perspective on what really truly matters is actually quite freeing. Mel sent me this cartoon this week, which is quite appropriate. Every work meeting should start like this. Hey, we're all going to die and none of this really matters. So let's just keep that in mind before anyone gets too worked up in here. Just to kind of set the tone. And I think it quite well describes the pointlessness of worrying about things that ultimately don't matter in the grand scheme of things. Because either your faith is in God and everything is secure, no matter how chaotic your life is, everything is secure, or you have faith and foundations in something else. And nothing is properly secure. Because when they fall over, and they will, everything else collapses as well. Faith in Jesus means putting him first. And that will actually mean walking away from some of the things in the world that you've built your faith and your security on. So why is God so mean? Why does he ask Abraham to leave his home? Why does he ask Moses to leave the comfort and security of Egypt? Those requests sound kind of cruel. But God is actually calling them away from security that is not secure. It doesn't last. He's saying, leave your temporary foundations and shift them to me. Shift them to something that is actually permanent. And if we can do that, then we will slowly, bit by bit, become people who can handle the chaos of life. Talking about Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, and Jacob, the writer says, all of these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were strangers and foreigners on earth. Verse 16, instead they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God because he has prepared a city for them. And this is the perspective that we start to get when we realize where our true foundations are. We are strangers and foreigners on earth. And this perspective should enable us to start to handle the ups and downs of life. In Philippians 4, 11 to 13, Paul says, I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all of this through him who gives me strength. Understanding where our true foundations lie, where our trust is actually really important. Faith doesn't necessarily solve our problems on earth, but it does give us a bigger perspective on what really matters and what our true purpose is. The thing is, though, it can be easy to be attracted to a version of faith where we do faith, we do it as a work, we do it well so that we get something back in return. Look at these examples here of people winning because of their faith or being physically saved. In verse 29, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried it, they drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell, and the army won. By faith, Rahab, when she had welcomed the spies, was not killed, she was saved. By faith, Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel conquered kingdoms, administered justice, gained what was promised, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength. They became powerful in battle, and they routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. We love those stories. They're great. To be honest, they're great stories. But if we just stop there, it can be tempting to conclude that if we do faith right, we'll be sorted out. We'll be saved. We'll get new, better jobs. We'll get healthy again. Our troubles will all go away in the here and now. But I don't know about you, but, well, especially for this week, for me that's not the consistent reality of life. Life is difficult. Stuff goes wrong. But you'll notice that the author doesn't stop there going on in verse 35 saying, yeah, but there were others. And those others were tortured, refusing to be released so that they could gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, chains and imprisonment. They were put to death in horrible ways. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and holes in the ground. The author is actually drawing a comparison here between these two groups. Those who were saved from lions, from flames, from swords, and those who weren't saved. But the important phrase is in verse 35, and that is an even better resurrection. What does that mean? Those others faced terrible things and they weren't saved here on earth but they had a better resurrection. How does that work? How do you get a better resurrection than being saved by saved from flames, from swords, from lions, or even physically being brought back to life again? How can you get better than being brought back to life? I think that this recognizes that being saved to continue living on earth is a bit of a mixed blessing. They will still face conflict. They will still face the normal struggles and chaos of life. And ultimately, they will all still face death. It's the same for us. If we get sorted out in the here and now, it's still only temporary. If we're sick and get made well again, there's a risk that we will still face another sickness. If I lose my job, imagine that. That'd be terrible, wouldn't it? But I get another job. There's no guarantee that next job will last. And then at the end of my life, whenever that is, I have no control over that, I will still inevitably face death. And so faith recognizes that there is a resurrection to a way better place. A place that will last forever. It's a recognition that this physical world is not actually our home. We can see this in Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, and Jacob in verse 13. They were foreigners and strangers on earth. Our lives here and now are not the real future. There is a better resurrection to come. So the warning is, if we rely on this idea that faith will give us good stuff in the here and now, then we will be disappointed. The stuff here in the visible world, our lives, our security, all of the things we tend to put our faith in, they're all temporary. Faith is not a guarantee of success in the physical world. As Murray Robertson pointed out last week, the relationship that we have with God is based on a promise, not a contract. There's no, I'll do this, and then God will do that for me. God has already done everything of significance for me. It's just that sometimes I can't see it because it's not all here in the physical world. So the challenge is, what happens when we lose those things here on earth that we've put our faith in? Does that shake our faith in God? Because those losses should actually serve to show how unreliable those things are and emphasize that they actually don't have any ability to truly support our lives. Instead, we tend to whine and complain and grumble and get angry when things go wrong and sometimes even blame God. Is that because we say we have God as our foundation, but we actually trust in other things? So in conclusion, faith is not a blind hope in something that you just can't prove, that you have no evidence for, and that you kind of hope might play out at the end of your life if you're lucky. It is logical. It actually makes sense. And it becomes personal when you realize the significance of it, of being created by God and given a purpose. And it is foundational. It starts to make you change what you build your life on. It gives you foundations. So, how's your faith? The key thing here is whether you believe it or not, whether you realize it or not, you have faith in something. You might be putting your trust in money. It might be your own intellect. It might be your status. It might be your job security. It might be your good health. It might even be the good works that you do, the things that you do at church on Sunday. The thing is, though, nothing in this visible world will last, and there is nothing in this physical world that you can put your faith in that will die for your sins. But there is one who has paid your debt already, and that's Jesus. Are you a Christian? If you are, where is your day-to-day, minute-to-minute faith? Where is your security? Is it really in Jesus? Because ultimately, the only thing worth building our lives on is Jesus. So whenever God calls you to obey, to start to shift your temporary foundations over to Him as the permanent foundation, and it's going to cost you something, do you obey? Abraham, when he was told to go, he went, even though he didn't know where he was going. Moses left Egypt, even though he knew it would mean leaving his wealth and security behind. When you hear God calling you and you know it's the right thing to do, but it might cost you something, it might cost you money, status, or opportunity, what do you do? Because the thing is, this is actually the same model that God has already given us in Jesus. Jesus is God, he lived in heaven, but he chose to give up his status, his security, and he chose to come to earth as a human. He heard the ultimate call away from his own security, and for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. He's not asking us to do anything that he wasn't willing to do infinitely more himself. So I ask you again, how's your faith?